Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and really excited for today's episode. But before we do jump into the episode, I just want to ask a quick favor. If you could go to the platform that you're listening to this podcast on and give us a review, hopefully a five-star review, particularly if you take value away from our episodes, because what that does, that helps us reach more people and hopefully have a positive impact on more people as well. And also, Wellbeing Wizard. Now, Wellbeing Wizard is about to launch. There is a waiting list. Now, Wellbeing Wizard will change the way that we actually deliver wellbeing in school. So I'm really excited about it. Head over to wellbeingwizard.ai. You can join the waiting list. I'll also put the waiting list in the show notes so you can be the first to know when it is launched. We're actually in the testing phase at the moment, and it's about to launch to everyone very shortly. So that's exciting for educators out there. Now, today's guest, I'm really excited to be talking to Jackie Clark. Now, this is not our normal type of episode. Now, Jackie is a personal wealth and money management expert with over three decades of experience. She works with high net worth families, individuals, and business owners. And the reason why I wanted to get Jackie on, because financial pressures can impact our well-being. So we've come from a educator perspective today, all right? And we talk about how educators can learn financial literacy, but also hopefully improve their financial well-being as well. Because for me, I just reflecting on when I started teaching, five years in, I had nothing to show, and then I just had one of those aha moments where I was just looking at my dad. My dad's a teacher. And I reckon at that time, he was probably late 50s, I reckon. And I thought to myself, I'm not sure, like I really enjoy teaching, but is it something I want to be doing for my entire life? I always thought, well, yeah, education's great, but what about living on my terms? Because as a teacher, there's no doubt about it. It's a great job, I love it. But do I want to be rocking up each day at a certain time, eating at a certain time when we get told to recess a lunch? Which is fine. Like, there's nothing, not having, it's just the way it is. It's a good structure. But from a lifestyle point of view, life's short, and we want to experience all different things. And I just had that aha moment after about 5 years of teaching. I started teaching a bit later. I would have been in mid-20s when I started teaching. So probably late 20s, around 30, I started to think about this. And that's when I personally looked into property. And back then, or about 2012, around 13, you didn't have to have probably a bigger deposit as you do now, but I just saved towards that deposit and I was able to buy a couple of investment properties back then. And that's when I got into investing in the stock market as well through different platforms. And it's helped a lot because it's made me be more aware of money as an educator, putting money away, not just, I guess, blowing it, not that's not the right word terminology, but spending it all from paycheck to paycheck. I want to have some leftover at the end of each fortnight to be able to invest. So that was my thought process back when I was teaching. And it's not something that we don't really talk about too much. And that's why I really wanted to get Jackie on today to talk about finances and particularly financial well-being for educators. So without further ado, we'll get into it. Actually, before I introduce Jackie, check out our book, Stop Worrying About Money. It's a brilliant book. Great takeaways in there. There's also a chapter in there for young people. So if you're a parent or a teacher reading it, there's also other ways, different ideas that we can introduce money concepts to or financial concepts to young people as well. And also in this episode, make sure you do hang around towards the end. The second half, we do talk about how you can introduce different financial literacy concepts into the classroom and also with young people at home as well. So without further ado, we'll get into the episode with Jackie. Jackie, welcome to the podcast.
It's so fabulous to be here. Ash, thank you.
No, I really appreciate you coming on because I think this is a really important topic that we're going to talk about today, and that's around financial well-being, specifically, I guess, with a focus of educators, I think, which is really important. And just thinking back from my experiences starting out going as a teacher when I was in my early 20s and then teaching to my 30s and through school and through, I guess, university, And my parents, it wasn't their fault. They probably didn't get educated themselves, but I never learned anything about finance. And just out of curiosity, I have learned a lot, probably in the last 15 years myself. But I think there's a lot to unpack here and a lot to learn. So, but I'm curious before, you're an expert in finance, whether that's financial well-being, working with high net worth families and individuals and business owners. How did you actually get into the financial world in the first place?
That's a great question, Ash. And it was a classic sort of need thing. I grew up in a family business, so I was surrounded by things happening about a business, which is definitely a way that you develop your financial literacy. But the reason for me getting into finance or actually becoming an accountant was I thought, hey, everyone needed somebody to help them out with the numbers. And I thought, oh, if I do this, I'll have a job for life. I actually thought to myself, oh, what? I could see that my parents could do with a hand with that. It's very easy to look after customers. Well, it's not that easy to look after customers, but you do need somebody to translate and keep an eye on things like cash flow for you. So I developed an interest at a very early age, but also it sort of was a bit of purpose for me too, actually being able to help people out. Because you would absolutely appreciate this. We spend our lives usually focused on what we're trained professionally to do. It's not that easy then to turn around and look at the books. All the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, can I ask what the family business was?
Oh, built plumbing and building.
Excellent. But
Yes.
no, that's really interesting. I love how love hearing how people get into, I guess, well, what set them on the path to where they end up today. And it sounds like you were keen to be involved in, I guess, finance in some capacity from an early age. And because I always ask teachers that, like, did you always want to be a teacher? And some people do put their hand up, but quite a few people, like most, or probably actually don't.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. You might have to cut this bit out, but I've always wanted to be a teacher.
Oh, really?
But I was concerned that from an age that it wouldn't pay as well as the income that I thought I needed. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing because I think that's probably one of the things as well. I think, I mean, obviously, it has gone, I mean, a lot of jobs do or do go up in
Yes.
pay scales as we will get become, I guess, the longer we go at it and just with, I guess, inflation and things like that. But that's an interesting thing because that might be something that teachers are concerned about, and I guess that's something that I guess we can really focus on today. And I just want to get into just a few questions. So, why is financial well-being such a crucial part of our overall well-being, especially for educators, do you think?
Well, I guess this is a great time with your previous episode on well-being for people and just the impact of stress and poor well-being on us. But actually, there's a great survey that was done by MLC. They did this financial well-being survey almost every year, and they did one last year. And they basically could prove that 80% of people felt that their lives were more manageable when their finances were in order. And certainly for me, in my experience, where I've seen people feel completely lost at sea is when things are out of control financially. And the impact that stress really comes back into the workplace, into the home, so many areas where I think financial stress actually impacts us. And a large part of that is the not knowing, like what you don't know or what feels out of control. And certainly where I spend my time working is trying to bring finances back into control.
Yeah, that's really interesting, that study. And
Yes.
it makes sense because I know that I always think about this, like a lot of issues that you hear that maybe families do have or even individuals is about money. Yes, it is like quite expensive to live at the moment. There's no doubt about that. But I think the earlier we learn these skills, you can set you up to avoid these, I guess, the financial stresses. And is that fair to say that we can actually, obviously, the more time you give yourself, the I guess the it's like the compound interest, that allows the compound interest to kick in. So what's your thoughts about, I guess, investing and maybe a couple of tips that I guess or habits or strategies that people can use to get in good habits with investing or finances?
Yeah, I would suggest that you want to start with goals, actually, Ash. So think about financial goals, but they're not financial goals that motivated you or I to invest. They're actually life goals, I think, which is saying by this age, I'd like to get to here, or in a year's time, I'd like to have a holiday, whatever it might be. And then I think you actually set that goal and then work out what are the steps to get there. And one of them tends to be financial. So there's an opportunity there in actually setting a financial goal. So to me, that's a really good start. Now, naturally, if you look that far out, it doesn't matter whether it's 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, but then you come back to, and what I focus on with most people is what does it cost to open your front door? So actually understanding the cost of opening your front door at home and working out what your baseline costs are is a really good way to get you on the journey to actually understand where things are at for you. And a lot of people aren't necessarily in touch with their cost of living in the way that I'm talking about it. So we can all have a general conversation about the increase of and cost of living. And I think particularly for educators or teachers, the impact of they're sort of in that hotspot, if you like, where typically mortgage stress is very well felt. So actually recognizing what your open the front door costs are at home, what it costs with your subscriptions, like your Netflix subscriptions, your internet services, your electricity, water rates, whatever it might be at home, including mortgage or rent, and actually saying, well, these are the things that are in my control. How do I influence them? Rather than just the money going out the door automatically every week, every month, trying to bring a little bit of control back to understanding where your money's at is a really good way, I think, to bring things into focus and help people.
Yeah, it makes sense. Is there a platform or I guess a way that we can track our finances? Because personally, I do listen to a lot of financial podcasts now, and you hear talk about people like what we just said then actually recommend really tracking your finances like for a month or a week. Do you have any ideas about around that and how people could actually do it?
So yes, most of the banking apps actually do, they do actually break down all of our expenditure. The difficulty someone like me might have is if I use multiple banks or more than one, I've got information spread in one place than the other. But let's keep it really simple, Ash. I use an Excel spreadsheet, and a lot of people may not be comfortable doing that. I can still only add up columns and things. But starting with your current credit card statement and your main bank account, and just sitting down and analyzing 1 month, just have a look at what's going out. We all know, essentially, what's coming in. People get surprised at how quickly it goes out the door. So keep it simple is the best way. You can get that information. There's no question that all the analysis is provided by each of the banks now on everything that we're doing. I just don't know that, whilst that will be accurate, I don't know if that's going to help you make decisions about what needs to change. And I think it's life is all about choices and, opting in and opting out of different things. And that's really important with getting control of your spending, or certainly getting on top of in terms of your own financial well-being, feeling settled about where you're at. It's going to take some time.
Absolutely. So I guess what's the next step after that? So people will have tracked their or documented maybe their purchasing. They might have lost track of it, but then they've actually, I guess, done a bit of a review of it and then found there's some subscription there that I think we've probably all done it that we don't actually really use anymore, but you're still paying for it. So when that has taken place, what do you recommend happens next?
Well, a couple of different things. First, I'd say if you have a goal, what's the goal? But the other thing we get to, and you will have definitely been through this, is working out that if you're earning a certain amount of income and a certain amount of dollars are going out the door, what's the gap? And what's happening with the gap? If it is, if there is actually a delta, which is say 20%, can you put that into savings? And then you start to work on your savings and investment strategy to work out, because I like to think our job is to kind of replace ourselves in life to some extent. So how can you develop another income stream from your savings and investment that's not dependent on you showing up every day?
What's an example of that?
So a term deposit, actually putting 20% of your income aside into a term deposit is probably the simplest or easiest way you can start. And we've got to recognize the different levels of financial literacy people have and understanding where they might be able to invest. What I caution people against doing is having not got the experience necessarily in where to invest money is going to their mate's place on the weekend and someone says you should buy shares in XYZ or read and look, yeah, seeing your reaction. I know we're not on video, but it happens all the time. And people say, look, oh, and crypto is a great weekend conversation up. Oh, so many people make money on crypto. And I just say to people, hey, have you done your own due diligence? Are you across that? And if you don't understand it, don't invest in it. It might be property for you. You might be working up towards buying an investment property. Do you understand the area that that property is in? Do you understand the strata rates or the council rates? You're understanding the costs that go with it. So it's about investigating options for investment. But all the while, we're just trying to create a little bit of a buffer between us showing up to work every day and our costs. And if there's not a gap, there's the treadmill. And you can stay on that treadmill for the rest of your life if you don't actually find a spot to pause and actually carve something out. Now, it might be as serious as saying, I earn X dollars, I've got this cost, they're the same. I've got nowhere to go. I've got to turn up to this job every day. I might not like the job. I might be looking for a career change, but I can't, you can't even think about it because you're so choked up with debt and or costs. And the only way you can is actually by taking the bull by the horns and reflecting on those costs and seeing what you might actually cut out. And the worst case might be that you haven't right-sized your life. And sometimes that's a bit of an aha moment for people as well, which is if you find that your cost base is so high and you've done all your analysis, you've checked your insurance, you can't reduce it anymore, you've checked your mortgage broker, you can't reduce your rate of interest anymore, you've cut the subscriptions out you're not using, and there's still not a buffer there, then I'd be saying, are you living in the right house in the right suburb, or do you need to change that as well to take some pressure off you showing up to work every day? And look, I think this is a big challenge for people, certainly teachers, educators, people who have got so much stress associated with their work that having to focus on financial stuff is also one of those, does it get shifted back? Is it sort of a lower priority? And my call out to people listening today is to say, hey, how can you prioritize this? Because this financial well-being is really significant and incredibly impactful on your life, whether you're connected with it or not.
Oh, absolutely. And a couple of things that just come to mind then, like a couple of sayings that I've heard over the years is like live below your means, which pretty much means we like live within what you actually make. So sometimes like you might, easy numbers, make $100,000 a year, but your outgoings are 120, so you're living off some credit. Therefore, you're always catching up. So you've got to just work out how you can actually, I guess, as you said, like make that equal or drop that below, so we're actually saving. Like, great saying that I've heard. I don't know. I mean, you hear it from a number of people is like, live below your means. And then what does it say? Like, basically, pay yourself first or invest the rest. So saving a certain amount and then investing it. You might.
Yeah, which is great. But like, I know that Australians on average, their savings rate is fairly low. And I say start with 20%. You really want to aim to at least be putting 30% of your income aside. But that might feel like too big a stretch. I love what you say too about, I talk about living within your means, but below even better. But perhaps the other thing that a lot of us have experienced is expense creep. I do talk a lot about expense creep, and I think about my lifestyle today compared to, and you will definitely experience this, is, from 20 finishing university to 25 to 30, and you with your promotions or your increases in the level in terms of teaching, for example, you earn more and more money, and then you change things like the type of wine you might drink, where you may or may not go out to dinner, how often you might get takeaway. All these little things like creep into our lives, and before you know it, you've got this just massive cost base. And it's like, hang on, how did I get here? When if you thought back to the post-university days to what you were living off then, what's changed? Not a whole lot. You just got a bigger pay packet and you just managed to spend it. So, if you were going to come back to sort of identifying or calling out the expense creep, what might change? And that's also a nice reflection opportunity, I think, for all of us. I always joke about what I used to drink when I was at, my first couple of years out of university, compared to what I might choose today. There's a big difference. And I'd hate to say what the inflation
Doing
was on that price, but yeah. But there's no reason why I couldn't be happy with the $7 or $8 bottle of wine,
yeah, absolutely.
The choice.
Really interesting because, like, when we do get a pay increase, like, yeah, you said that creep that, but what we can actually do is, okay, I've got this pay increase, I'm gonna put all that into a savings or an investment account, wherever it might be. I think that's a good strategy.
I think it's a great strategy. And it makes me laugh a little bit because one of the things that I see too often is whether it's the pay rise or the bonus or that's already spent before people receive it. And that's actually pretty sad when that happens. So people foreplan that they've got that particular thing coming. The holiday's already booked. Yeah, or the handbag's bought or the new car's been upgraded, whatever it is. And just at what point in time could you say, actually, this is all, I don't need this, that, or the other. How can I save that difference? And again, it really does come back to though understanding what's going out the door in the first place.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think just things that reflecting back when I was like coming out of uni and becoming a teacher, you started to make some money. And then as you got, or for me anyway, I'll just think about my journey is like with finances coming out of university. I used to go out like with my mates and probably didn't have much to show for it at the end of the fortnight. And then you sort of repeat it. And then I got to a stage where I thought, I can't keep doing this. Like, it was good fun, don't get me wrong. But like there's got to be a time when you say to yourself, look, I've got to actually think about the future. And my dad was a teacher. He worked like as a teacher when he was like graduated probably when he was 21, worked until he's 65, worked his whole life. Then about 2 years later he passed away after he retired. So and that wasn't the reason for me thinking about finances. But what I did notice when my dad was in his probably early 60s, I thought, do I want to be, I guess, teaching full time, like when I'm that age. So that sort of triggered me. Like, I think I've actually got to like actually take some responsibility here. And going back 2000 and probably 10, I reckon I started to look into property. And this was just pure out of pure probably reflection for my own benefit. I didn't have
Well,
parents.
maybe some curiosity as well, Ash. Like a little bit of curiosity in that situation, it goes a long way.
And I just didn't. What wasn't brought up in the situation where I got taught how to invest, like a lot of people don't, but I wish I did. But then I've gone down this path and been really focused on it probably for the last, or what are we in, probably 15 or 12, 14 years, I reckon. And that I do have a few investment properties now. I've got some shares where I use like ETFs, which you might be able to talk about what ETFs are in a minute. Which you don't really have to do too much, I guess, study to work what individually you're investing in, because we have these ETFs, which are a bunch of different shares put together, made it easy for people to invest. And I'll probably butcher that description a little bit, but
No, I think exchange traded funds or ETFs are a great way to access the market when you have perhaps limited knowledge. But I'd still encourage people to understand what that ETF's focus is. It is a way of accessing a segment of the market, if you like, with a number of shareholdings rather than one singular shareholding. So it may spread your risk, but often with ETFs as well, they have a theme. They're generally themed. So you might be in the education sector, or you might be in the mining sector, or you might be in the technology sector. So there's things like that that are worthwhile just sort of understanding or recognizing before you buy into that particular ETF.
it's also demographic or geography based as well. Like you can invest in like America, like specifically, or you could invest in
You
Asia.
can, which is nice as well. But again, understanding the geopolitical aspects of those investments is important. And just because someone has also said that might be a good idea, you need to do your own research. And that's the one thing I spend a lot of time saying to people is like, that might be a good idea. Does it suit you? And does it suit your risk profile? Does it suit where, just coming back to that sort of goal conversation, the type of like the way we invest our superannuation. We talk about being in growth phases right now. We might be more balanced later on in life, or we might flip that over time. I see a lot of people changing the way their superannuation's invested. And there's the Teachers Federation. There's a few different super. I mean, there's a lot of choice now, but that changes over time. But it's important to actually look at that and check if you're happy with the way your superannuation is structured in terms of the type of investments it's got.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important for people to check, because when you start working, sometimes you just get put into a fund.
You bet.
I don't know what it is. I remember I had to go, when
Yeah.
I I started teaching because you had a few part-time jobs and somehow you opened up a
Yes.
fun like a and then like
You
things changed.
carry that with you until someone says, oh, here's another one. And it's like, oh, now it's like we're spoiled for choice. In fact, too much information now. And you might follow just what your mates follow or your co-workers follow, which might be fine until you are prepared to sort of invest a little more time in understanding what the costs are of having money in that particular fund and whether, again, that makes sense for you and your circumstances.
And just on, so I think it's worth touching on, super. I think it's a pretty important thing to talk about because I think I might be increasing soon, but you can actually invest up to 27,500 a year, I believe. Is that going to increase? I think
Yes, it's indexed. Yes, it should be. I don't know what next year's number is actually.
it's 27,500 at the moment. Now, obviously, our employees pay 12.5%, I think. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Something like that. So
Yeah.
the I have a bit of a gap where you can actually make some contributions to get up to that 27.5.
That's right.
So that's something to think about as well. And if this is something I learned, and you might be able to just correct me if I'm slightly out, but say if you invest 22,000 in one financial year, there's actually carry forward or carry over where you can actually make up that difference the following year.
Well, you can put undeducted contributions into the super fund up to quite a substantial limit separately. So ones that you don't get a tax deduction for.
Right.
So yeah, so there's additional superannuation that you can put in, and there's also a bring forward on 3 year rule. So it's worth investigating, but there's quite you can actually add money to superannuation in substantial licks if you like. So that might be relevant for somebody if a relative's passed away and they've come into some money. Or they've got a redundancy payout, and they've got some cash where they might want to, well, they can do lots of things with that, renovate their house, buy a car, go on a fancy holiday, or just not work for a couple of months and use that money to live off. But a contribution to super might be something worth considering as well for that. So,
I think
yeah, look,
check
it's.
really, isn't it? That's the main thing. Just to check what you actually.
Yeah, and so again, this goes to that whole, the whole, your whole investment strategy. And superannuation is a part of that. So recognizing from your total cash flow, if we've got savings, superannuation is another aspect of that. It's not the only aspect, and savings aren't the only aspect. So saying, well, what percentage of money am I putting away? Yes, that I can access in my 60s, which is a bit different to what I might need to live off now, or at 50 when I decide I'm going to work a little bit less, maybe part-time, and I might have to start, getting into my savings. Which may be separate from any superannuation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just want to talk about, Jackie, just about dollar cost averaging. So something that I've done over the last, well, probably 5 or 6 years is when I get money come in, I've just got, or not even when I've got money coming in, I just set fortnightly or monthly amounts of money to go into investment accounts. So pretty much I've got a BetaShares account, which is a platform where you can invest in. I've got a Vanguard. One they're my main two, but also I've got a Raise account where if I go to the supermarket and tap my card, what that does, that just say if it's, I don't know, $19.80 the cost, it'll invest that 20 cents to the nearest dollar, which is that difference, into this Raise account. And over time, like I reckon in about 12 months, I've invested about $2,000 without even thinking about it into that Raise account, just by tapping in, getting those. Or, it automatically rounds it up to the nearest dollar and then invests it through that account for you.
Yeah. I think that's fairly sophisticated. It's the most basic thing, right? But it's fairly sophisticated for where a lot of people are at. So, I mean, I've got kids doing that, but not a lot of people have dialed into these. It's a hack. I would consider that to be a bit of a life hack, like how to basically force save without you feeling it necessarily. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
that's, and yeah, I mean, I think you're really advanced in this space, actually, based on my experience with a lot of it, particularly educators, in even spending time on it. And perhaps over your life journey, you've said, I need to do this because I'm not going to be doing this forever. So therefore, but there was a moment where you paused and said, okay, I need to rethink this. And a lot of people are too busy to do that. And it's not until something goes wrong, someone gets sick, someone is, has an incident at work, they can't work anymore, whatever it might be, is when they then say, okay, I'm going to do this differently. You don't want it to be too late.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think, I mean, Right, the time's the key because, I mean, we can talk about compound interest, and that's one of the skills, or I'm not sure if it's a skill, but that's something I wish I learned when I was at school.
Yeah, and that's probably the most basic finance principle that we'd love everyone to be taught from the age of four, you know, how to take advantage of compound interest.
Absolutely. And I think I just recommend people looking into like a platform like Raise. We don't have to talk about it too
Yeah.
much. Just go and investigate it. Raise, RAIZ. You've got another one, BetaShares, that a platform where you can put into an account a certain amount a week, month or week or whatever you want to do, and then it invests it for you. And you don't even have to think about it. I know you mentioned, Jackie, that this is quite an advanced strategy. It probably is, but it's actually easy to do as well.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely within reach of people, and perhaps what you don't need is a whole lot of knowledge to do it. Actually, it's just about activating it, like participating is what you get points for participating in this one.
Is that, like, you don't know sometimes. You just don't know that these platforms are around, and I certainly didn't until I started like reading like books, and I that you're rich,
Yes.
stop worrying about money.
Yeah.
That's your, and we'll definitely put that in the show notes, and like listen to podcasts. There's some great finance podcasts out there. One of my favorites is Equity Mates, which is a really good one. And yeah, there's a lot of content out there now that we can actually
Much.
plug into just to learn some basics. And I think that's the most important thing, just to learn some real basic things. Jackie, if it's okay, I wouldn't mind just transitioning into how we can teach young people about.
Yes, favorite topic. As you know, it's the last chapter in my book, and it's the biggest chapter because when I started writing it, I couldn't stop. And we've got five sons, so you know, we've got a bit of experience with kids and money. I can't say we've got it all right, but there is a huge responsibility to help kids with money. And I think there's an opportunity in the classroom too, which obviously we miss, you know, in terms of our education system. And this might change in our lifetimes, but financial literacy is obviously something that we're not teaching specifically. So, sure, if you've got someone in their secondary school doing economics, they might start to learn about it, but it's perhaps from a different perspective. You know, all the business courses these days. So I think there's an opportunity even for teachers or educators to bring it into the classroom. And it can be simple stuff. You know, if you think about, like, we're all on a journey to financial independence, whether that's financial independence from the job we have or from a partner earning money, whatever it might be, we're all on a journey to some level of financial independence, which is where our investments actually pay us an income. So we don't have to work or, you know, work less, say. And I think with kids being, you know, we make money look really easy these days. So when you and I are growing up, we might have seen cash around. We might have spent cash. And when the cash was spent, there was nothing left. As we've gone to cards and now we've gone to tap. And so really there's not an experience of money landing in your hand or money, you know, back in the days of yellow envelopes, they used to receive those on the building site when I was growing up. My mum used to prepare them. Those days are long gone. You know, right now an amount of money arrives in your bank account. And kids don't see this side of it, like the transactional side of it. They just see things, packages arriving at the front door magically. They may be lucky enough to see you tapping to pay bills, but it's not valued. It doesn't have a value attached to it, like a $20 note or a $50 note. It's quite different, or a greenback, so to speak. Yeah, so I think depending on the age of kids, you can start with the real basics. And I think teachers, even in classrooms, have the opportunity to build financial literacy in the simplest of ways. And whether that's by picking on a topic that's in the press, or I try and encourage people to get their eyes on some financial press, read a paper, or actually look up some financial news just to get familiar. Like you talk about compound interest or dollar cost averaging, trying to get familiar with terms like superannuation, what is it? So it's a kind of a nice way of starting. But the things that probably matter when you think about your school journey, apart from the tuck shop and spending money, getting your lunch paid for, preferably by your parents, is things like mobile phones. And then, as you get much later on in school, things like cars. So, what are the things we care about as kids? Clothes, cars, you know, maybe not much more than that, boys and girls. But I think that you can start talking about meaningful goals with kids as well. And I like to think one of the things that we all struggle with now is delaying gratification, and kids are no different. Yeah, and I think in the classroom there's an opportunity as well to help contemplate that gratification, and whether it's something like encouraging kids to get part-time jobs or little side hustles. I mean, teachers might like the idea of having a side hustle too, because I think a lot of teachers these days do lots of other activities to supplement their income. But kids no different. What other things they might be able to do to generate an income could be quite a helpful discussion when they're at an age. It's like encouraging them to go home and offer to help mum and dad out with some tasks at home, and could they be paid for it? Because they're trying to save money towards the next game for the console they've got, or maybe they're looking 3 years out and they know they want to buy a car when they're able to drive, things like that. So I think you can normalize, what I'd like to encourage is normalizing talking about money a little bit. It's like sending kids home with a project to say, why don't you find out what the cost of the electricity is in the house or the internet? By going home and asking the parents those questions, they'll be like, oh, I don't know, or let me have a look. And you go look at a bill and go, geez, actually, it's $2,500 a quarter, that electricity bill. Whoops, we maybe need to turn the lights, not leave that light on the front porch all night. So there's sort of connecting the dots on the process. It's no different. I talk about taking kids to the supermarket. Now, teachers aren't going to do this, but parents can, and they can show their kids the difference between the price of like a no-name brand product to a well-recognized brand, and talk about the value of the brand versus the no brand, and you see the price. You take someone
Yes.
on that journey right through to paying for it. It can add up, as we all know. And if you're trying to get to a particular outcome, which might be a holiday to Fiji at the end of the year, these are the things that we need to do. I had this great family, after reading my book, a single mum took her kids through a little workshop and they were brainstorming as a family how to go away on a holiday. And the kids and the mum, they're all working out what things they might change or sacrifice to get on that holiday. And the mother had said, oh, look, I get a takeaway coffee every day. And she said, I'm going to forego that because I think if I add all that up, that gets to this number by the time we want to go on this holiday. And the kids go, no, no, mum, you love your holiday. But what about this other cost that we have in the house? Could we do something about that? Or, Friday night's pizza night and we want to change that to save money for a holiday. So look, I mean, there's actually a thousand ways, but I think back to what matters to kids, and I think of things like gaming, not gambling, but that is a bit of a problem. Using your mobile phone, internet access, clothing, then cars and travel and the rest of it and time. So how do you kind of connect the dots on getting to that point? And I just think in an educator role, we can start to talk. We can help build financial literacy simply by asking if people know what interest rates are, what the inflation rate is, what does that mean to the price of bread, or milk, things that kids consume where they can actually recognize the impact. And you can have, it wouldn't matter if you were teaching geography, whatever the subject is, you can still bring, I think, these topics into conversation just for a bit of fun, actually.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that how you mentioned about the terminologies, like what is superannuation, like what is it? And what is bridging, what's an investment account, what's
Yes.
just the terminology and what they actually mean. And I think one thing, like the compound interest, what I like to do personally, I love putting numbers in a compound interest calculator
Yeah.
and playing with them. And like if
You're a finance nerd,
I think, and I don't actually have kids, but my partner
Yeah.
Beth does. She's got an 11-year-old, and we've been together a few years now, and he we've spoken about, I think I just started talking about it with her about, look, I wish I learned this when I was young. I didn't have, don't have kids. So I sat down with him. He's a pretty cluey kid. I sat down with him one day and just showed him this compound interest. And I've done it with my nephews as well. I've got a 17-year-old and 19-year-old nephews. I opened up a Vanguard account for them for Christmas one year and put some money into it. And they had to
Yeah.
contribute.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So just those things. And I think, and just showing him, like particularly the 11-year-old, just how the compound interest works. Like, look, to be honest, it's not going to be a huge difference in 2 years, but if you keep doing this for 10, 15, 20 years, it's going to like go to a huge amount.
Yeah, because the set and forget thing is quite powerful too. Because if we started this conversation today talking about financial well-being, and I brought stress into it, if you've got to continually refresh these things, it's not great for you either. But if you can set and forget a little bit, as long as you keep on top of what the bank or the financial institution's offering, that's a good thing. Like it just reduces the stress, and tying money up that way is, it can be quite positive for you.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, yeah, just like in the classroom, just showing like what compound interest is and doing some few calculations on the board, like most, I mean, most schools have a smart board these days and you can connect like the internet up and just putting a calculator up there and just showing like it's just pretty powerful. And that might just stick with people and get in the habit of like putting some away, spending some, also giving some away. Do you actually, just on that, do you think there's value in the old school way with like particularly young kids, I'm talking 4, 5, 6 year olds, 10, where you actually do have coins and you've got the jar, saving, spending, giving. Is there still value in that?
I think there's value in any role modeling with kids around saving money. So if it's the jar and if it's got coins in it, even if you use Monopoly notes, I think anything like that. Like I talk about very visually taking younger kids into the supermarket, and I mean young kids because I think once they see, oh, it's a bit like, when mummy or daddy goes to work each day, that's filling up the other side of this, wonderful device that I tap. But then when we go and spend it, there's money comes in, money goes out. This can end up sort of empty, right? You have to go to work each day to fill that up. But actually taking them on that, I think experiential stuff with money, like a visual, like a jar or a coin or a note, is really powerful. And the only challenge then is money burns a hole in our pockets, and kids in particular. And I remember being young, just all I wanted was a couple of dollars, not even a couple of dollars, just to buy some hot chips on the way home from school, or buy some Redskins or some, a little bag of lollies. Sometimes it's back then there was slightly different denominations that I was looking for, like 20 cents, whereas now it'd be $5 or a number upwards from there. So these are all just role modeling good money behaviors. And that's why I think, even in the classroom, if teachers are having a conversation, developing their own financial literacy, could be a really powerful thing. Oh, I'm thinking of focusing on my financial literacy. What do you guys think about X, Y, or Z topic each week? You just drop it into roll call. Is anyone, what's today's inflation? Whatever it is, it's just like familiarity, having a language around us that just feels a little bit more comfortable, because so many people aren't comfortable. And probably the number one mistake people make with money is they put their head in the sand.
That's really interesting. And what came to mind just then, I've had a few really interesting guests on talking about connection as well. Dr. Mark Williams, Gavin McCormack have all talked about building connections with your students, and that's probably a good way to do it. I mean, you don't have to.
Oh, definitely. Especially if it's off topic. If you're sure, if you're the maths teacher, it's adjacent, but if you're the English teacher, geography teacher, you're the year master, whatever it is, I think there's a way of, it's like you're giving them a gift, actually, that is what really binds. Like the stories you hear about kids being bound to that one teacher who, over their lifetime, they'll come back and tell you that story. Yeah, there's an opportunity doing it when you go role model, but off topic to what your core, what they expect from you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't have to go, don't have to show your bank account, but like just talking about it and like sharing experiences. Oh, went to the supermarket today, saved $20 doing, I don't know, bulk shopping. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like just.
Yeah, exactly that. Or I did meal planning. I did meal planning. I worked out by doing this and that, and same with, I guess kids getting money for lunches, how they can help out at home, make that more effective. You want to get something, because kids are always on the hunt for wanting something, then how can they negotiate? They might decide to make their lunch with Vitaweets and, the sandwich loaf at home for the week, and take the money from the parents for a lunch, and save that towards something. I'm not suggesting stealing from their parents, but what I mean is actually negotiating to do it differently, which is, how about I make my own lunch, and could you still give me that money? I want to save towards a goal I've got.
Yeah, I love that. That's really interesting. Jackie, really loving this conversation. I've really come to think about this in the last, I don't know, probably decade or so about does money make us happy? I don't know if it makes us happy, but it does solve a lot of issues. I
I
put that.
think it's an enabler, but it does come with responsibility. So I think money comes with responsibility, and therefore, if you're earning it, you need to make choices with it. And how you make those choices and which direction they take you, I think, is where your happiness, the decision around happiness, may be connected. Money doesn't make you happy. It just makes it may make some things easier. But you know, I deal with a lot of people with an awful lot of money, and it's very unhappy.
Yeah, I can see that as well. But it's really, I think, I don't know, for me, I've been in situations before going from teaching to studying, growing with gratitude and not having a regular income where it has got a bit sort of both sides as well, where it's been a bit more comfortable to that stressful sort of time. And I think just being, I guess, having a sense that you know that you've got at least enough for the basics. Like, I'm not a material person personally. I'm not into cars, into like the latest, I don't know, fashion, or just got my GWG hoodies all around and like that. So I'm more into experiences. I love going on little getaways. Like,
They all cost money, don't they?
exactly. So you've got to have those goals about where your priorities lie, and just work towards them. And once you do have that money to invest in these experiences, it's great. And I think it just provides more options, knowing that you've got that money to give yourself options, if so to speak. And I think that's where, for me, that happiness comes from in terms of finances, knowing that you can have these little experiences that you value.
But wouldn't you say also that being financially independent is a great outcome, but there are choices you've made to get to a point where you're financially independent, and you've made choices, and you haven't blown it on all the experiences you want to do. You've blown it on some of the experiences, or you haven't blown it. You've actually got a real uplift from a particular type of experience. It might be the thing that gets you out of bed in the morning, which is great. But
Absolutely.
I think with again, you've been able to call it out, but in the absence of meaningful goals around money, it's very difficult to tie up the happiness as well.
No, absolutely. I agree with that. And I guess just one final question, Jack. If you're, I guess, mate, I'm just trying to work out maybe, ooh, a couple of different scenarios. If you're like a university student, just graduated, whether that's teaching or another industry, but the main audience is teachers here, what would you recommend if they really wanted to, like, they had an understanding about, right, I'm making some money now. I know I want to take care of, or start looking towards taking care of my finances right from the start. What advice would you give there?
Oh, so if they asked, which I love, is I would consider what I wanted my life to look like 5 years from now. And does it mean I'm going to be living at home still? So get that question out of the way first. So, what's your living situation like? What's your lifestyle like? Does it involve travel? How do you plan to travel? If you're looking to obviously get presumably a graduate position, you'll understand soon enough what the income or salary might be from that. And then work out a savings goal, like just anything to provide a bit of a cushion so that if you're not sure yet, because you might step into a career and think, what was I thinking? I need to take some time off, do something different. So I encourage the saving aspect of it, just so that people have a buffer. To enable them to make, again, it just comes back to being able to make a choice. Don't feel like you're stuck. You don't want to step out of college, move out of home, jack up some high rent, and every dollar's going on that because you just reduce your own flexibility. That goes completely out the door. Your choices are gone unless you pack up, move back home. You know, it's like being back at square one. So I think the goal thing is really valuable. Working out your living circumstances first is really helpful, and then work your way back to. How do I want to experience this? I'm going to give it a go for this amount of time, but start saving some money for an adventure. And whether that adventure is a new car or whether it's a new suit or whether it's savings for something, a deposit on a house, just to work that out. I just think we need direction, and the lack of direction is what will kill that experience. And quite seriously, looking at what it does cost to live your lifestyle. And doesn't need to change so much from the university days just because you've got more money coming in the door.
Oh, I agree with that totally. Like, I think we're going through university, and you see a few numbers in the bank account, and you think everything changes. But I mean, it could. But I think you just got to think about that. Do you really, really need?
Yeah, there's also a reward as well. Like there's definitely a point where you want to reward yourself. You finish your uni degree, if you secure your first job. It's really lovely to be able to recognize that. But let's be real about it too. Let's not like continue on this journey of, rejoicing and rewarding oneself forever. Yeah.
I guess it's the probably best advice, just be aware, like be aware of aware.
Absolutely. And how can you build your skills in this area like you have, Ash? But what can you take away from this conversation actually to help develop your skills, like pay some attention to these things?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess just one last one with the teacher who has been like teaching for 10 years, like I'm just thinking myself, probably 10 years of, maybe not 10, maybe five, give myself 5 years of probably not showing much for it after 5 years. Like I was teaching full time and then look at my bank account and thought, I've got really nothing to show. And now I am aware of it. What would you, where would you recommend people start? Is it opening up a investment account or just building that buffer, as you said? What's the first step there, do you think?
Yeah, part of it's also saying, what's my North Star going to be? What do I want it to look like in 10 years from now? So, yes, I always think the second bank account's helpful, the one that you kind of live off, and then the other one that's creating some level of saving. You just can't go wrong with that. Starting with that, at least, if you end up spending it on, like we say, a car or something else, then that's okay if that's part of what you set out to do. But definitely, yeah, second bank account's a great start. And then perhaps educating yourself about the capital markets, seeing what the Australian Financial Review or the Sydney Morning, whatever the papers are saying about, read the business section, kind of work out the flavour, what's happening is a good start.
Absolutely. No, really,
It's
when
a
we
bit like, it becomes real. It's like the adult thing. This stuff becomes very real for you. Then you have to make choices. No one else is going to do it for you.
absolutely, and I think that's one of the things that I mean, I always talk about that when I go into schools and talk with the children, like being responsible. Nobody else is going to do it for you. This could be anything. It could be your schoolwork. Yeah, you got people around you who are going to support you, but you've got to do it.
Yeah.
Like what we're talking about here, it's up to you. Like you've got experts like yourself. And other people as well, we talk about it, but you've really actually got to do it. Like you only can get advice or recommendations, but you've actually got to take the step to actually do it yourself, like being responsible for either improving your situation or put yourself in a good position. Nobody else can do it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And the other thing I often talk about is financial accountability. So people, you can sort of delegate it, people delegate in relationships. Somebody might be better at it than the other person, but I encourage all partners in relationships to be across the finances. And I think it's the same, once you're earning an income, it's actually your responsibility. So hold yourself accountable to it and perhaps don't, frivolously spend it away.
Yes. That's right. That's right. That's right. We learn from it and yeah, you move on. But Jackie, look, where can people find you? I know you've got your book, Stop Worrying About Money, and that can be found in bookstores, and online, I'm sure. Well, I'm Amazon and probably your own personal brand website, which is JackieClark.com.
Dot M-E. Yes.
Oh, Jackie, sorry.
That's okay. Dot com
I
or bond.
forgot. Actually knew, I was thinking when I said doc, it's not dot com. I had that in my, but I said it.
Yeah.
JackieClark.me, M-E.
Yes.
Excellent. And you can find out a bit more about Jackie there, and also highly recommend getting her book. Is there any other where or other, where else can other people find you, Jackie?
Oh, pretty much Instagram. I'm Jackie Clark 000. I'm on LinkedIn, Jackie Clark. Yeah, so very easy to locate, Ash, if anybody wants to connect.
Excellent. I really appreciate your the conversation today. And again, personally, I learned a lot, and I'm sure other people will take a lot away from our conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Ash. I really appreciate the thought you've put into it. This is an area that, as I said, you're well advanced in. So I hope it lands well with everyone as well.
Excellent. I appreciate that. I didn't realize that I was, so that's good to know.
You are. You are. Well done.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Jackie.
All right, take care.